Now imagine a world where you can walk down the sidewalk in your neighborhood and find fresh fruits, veggies, nuts growing right out of the ground for anyone to pick and eat for free. It's a future that a Wisconsin nonprofit group is trying to make a reality. They're called Wisconsin Food Forests. They already have a few projects running in La Crosse, Madison, and Milwaukee. You can also do it in your own front or backyard. Emily Steinway is one of the co-founders of Wisconsin Food Forests. Emily, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Can you paint us a picture of how a food forest works?
Well, ironically, the easiest way to plant one is to start with a flat mowed lawn. So once you have that, you can add in the edible, mostly native, and mostly perennial plants of choice. So we usually go with fruit trees and shrubs. We'll plant things for pollinators as well, herbs, ground covers like strawberry, and we'll also put in some shrubs. Occasionally we'll do some perennial vegetables, and they all kind of grow together. You plant the taller plants to the north and the shorter plants to the south so that everything gets plenty of sunlight. And it's basically trying to mimic a forest ecosystem because it's such a stable way of producing food.
And the concept here is you're not just growing it for yourself to eat or sell or something like this. The idea is it's in a public-ish space where people can stop by and snack for free?
Yes. Yeah, we try to plant these food forests for free on public land or for other nonprofit organizations. So the main one that has been the most successful is called Lansing Food Forest, and it's on the east side of Madison. And the neighborhood, the Eastmoreland neighborhood, has really embraced it and helped with maintenance and let us use their water, which was critical for getting the food forest established. And now people, they come by and they pick strawberries with their kids, or they'll harvest tomatoes in the summer. And it's also become a neighborhood gathering space. So we'd like to plant food forests so that they're accessible for people.
What was the inspiration for this idea for you?
For me, I've always enjoyed eating fruit. And so I started out as a hobby planting fruit trees for friends and family, and then I turned it into a business. And then when my friend Aaron and Rodney came up with the idea for Wisconsin Food Forests and asked me to join, I was super excited and started scheming and planning right away. And we planted our first food forest with our organization in 2019 at a farm sanctuary, so that the plants will be there for not only the people, but also for the farm animals.
Now, as you mentioned, this could be on private land or land owned by a nonprofit. You've also worked with city governments. Are there likely suspects out there, patches of land that don't have a lot of other good options for them? What kind of things are you looking for?
Yeah, so we're lucky here in Madison. We have the city of Madison has the edible landscape permit process, which is a page on their website and a whole series of steps that you can follow in order to plant on city-owned land. And that's how we got Lansing Food Forest. It's on city engineering land. We've been contacted by people from other cities around Wisconsin to help them figure out how they can work with their city. And it usually involves meeting with your city representative, your alder, or someone on the city council, and reaching out to the people in your community, talking to them, seeing who's interested. It only takes about 3 or 4 people to get the whole process going, and we're definitely able to help with that. We're hoping to do something in Fort Atkinson next year, and also in Sharon, Wisconsin, and Reedsburg, Wisconsin. We've been working with them as well.
And I understand, at least from your website, you are looking for more possible food forest sites in 2023. If people are out there hearing this thinking, yeah, that sounds cool, and I know just the spot, what do you want to hear from them? What can they do to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so our website is wisconsinfoodforests.com, or they can email us at contact@wisconsinfoodforests.com. We do have a couple of things in the works for 2023, but nothing is set in stone yet. So we're still looking for a few more potential sites.
And it sounds like step one is clearly building your local team. Do you have suggestions on how to reach out to, I guess, neighbors in particular to say, hey, does this sound cool to you?
Yeah. Yeah. Find a site if you can, something that's flat and mowed, because that's going to be the easiest to transform. And then find a water source is also critical. So either city water or a neighbor who's willing to let people use their water. And you only need to water for the first 1 or 2 or 3 years, because since we're mostly planting perennials, once they get established, your watering needs go way down, and they're also going to be generating their own mulch once the forest is more mature. So if you have those things and then just a few people, you can get a food forest going in your community.
Emily, thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Emily Steinway, one of the co-founders of Wisconsin Food Forests. She was with us today for a look at their efforts to grow free fruit and vegetable and nut plants on public lands for anyone to eat. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a Cuban refugee who lives in La Crosse. He's one of the people featured in a new podcast, WPR Reports, Uprooted.
When Ernesto Rodriguez of La Crosse was 24 years old, he left the only home he'd ever known, Cuba.
And then when they asked me, do you want to leave Cuba? I go, yeah, because I don't want to be there.
He, along with 125,000 of his fellow Cubans, hopped on boats bound for the United States in 1980. They were part of the mass exodus known as the Mariel Boatlift, a rare moment when President Fidel Castro allowed residents to leave the island. Among that group that fled, almost 15,000 ended up at Fort McCoy in Sparta, Wisconsin, including Erne. And while living there, Erne spent a lot of time in the kitchen. The staff were cooking the refugees American food, like hamburgers and hot dogs, food they hadn't developed a taste for yet. So a cook named Tony asked Erne a question.
And Tony asked me, what kind of food you guys like? It's Cuban food. I said, what the Cuban food? And then I show him like how to make a congee and a chicken fricassee and mashed potato, but not like mashed potato from here is different.
And it's in this kitchen that Erne met someone who was born and raised in Sparta, someone who had become family.
I'm just Brian Brandstetter. Ernie's my brother from another mother.
Mm-hmm.
My family was one of the sponsors of Erne, mm-hmm, back in 1980.
We are a good friend, we are a good brother, because I love the guy like he's my own brother.
Well, I've been your brother longer than not. Yeah, 41 years, 1980, wow.
In order for Erne to get out of Fort McCoy, he had to find a sponsor who would vouch for him and help him find housing and a job. That's where the Brandstetters come in. Brian's parents, Roger and Annette Brandstetter, became Erne's sponsors. Erne went to live with the family in Sparta.
Yeah, they moved into my bedroom and they wore our clothes that they could fit in. My parents would go shopping for them. You know, they fed them. They gave them love.
Yeah, mom, she was the best mom. I never had a mom.
Erne's new mom, Annette, is one of the most important people in his life.
I told her that my mom, every birthday, she making me an upside down pineapple cake. Every birthday.
Yeah.
Sometimes I say, Mom, I don't want to dance no more. You, and she called me, Benny, happy birthday. Come and get your cake. They said, wow, man, I'm lucky. Because they give me everything. I don't need nothing. They give me everything.
Roger got Erne a job at his car dealership. And this was a big deal, since it was not always easy for Cubans to find jobs.
And my dad had a very optimistic view. He goes, oh, we'll teach him English, we'll get him into church, we'll get him working.
But Brian says once they got to church, the new community wasn't necessarily welcoming of his new brother.
My parents lost a lot of their right-leaning friends because they're like, How could you do this? You let them into your house. You let them work for you. And it's crazy. They didn't feel good about it. Our mom was a very stern woman, and she wasn't going to take any crap from anybody. So she'd get all uppity, and she wouldn't care, and she'd create enemies.
Despite the pushback, Brian and Erne remained tight. They're family now.
Because nobody does that for a black guy in another country. And I always call you are my real mom.
Erne's journey to the United States wasn't easy. He's been through a lot, but he found sponsors who loved him and cared for him. Sponsors who would help him start a new life in Wisconsin. To learn more about Erne's life in Cuba, how he served in the military, was sent to prison, and took a treacherous boat ride to get to the United States, check out the podcast WPR Reports Uprooted. All 8 episodes plus historical photos can be found at wpr.org/uprooted. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.